This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. On the way today, you'll hear Thane Maynard's conversation with the man known as the Indiana Jones of wildlife conservation, Dr. Alan Rabinowitz. Rabinowitz is a leading expert when it comes to big cats and talks about his picture book, A Boy and a Jaguar. Also coming up, Daniel James Brown shares the story behind his best-selling book, The Boys in the Boat, Nine Americans and Their Quest for Gold at the 1936 Olympics. But to begin with, back to the Civil War and an intriguing character whose name you might not be familiar with, despite the fact that he fought in some of the biggest battles, was a governor of Ohio, secretary of the Interior of the United States, president of the University of Cincinnati, a law school dean, a scientist, a businessman, and so much more. Joining me on the phone is historian Dr. Eugene D. Schmiel to discuss the life and career of this accomplished man and his new book, Citizen General, Jacob Dolson Cox and the Civil War Era. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition, Gene.
Thank you very much, Mark. Glad to be with you.
What, where in your career as a history professor did you first encounter Jacob Cox?
Well, he was during my graduate school days at Ohio State. I did a seminar and 19th century American history, and 19th century American history was my focus. And I learned about Jacob Cox, and I spoke to my professor. And at the time, of course, I had to get a dissertation topic. And I suggested that perhaps the life of Jacob Cox would be an interesting topic to write about. And frankly, I was startled, given all the jobs that Mr. Cox has had during his time, that no one had ever done that. So I did that, and that's where I first got my introduction. So he was the topic of my doctoral dissertation many, many years ago.
So this has been percolating for a little while.
Well, it percolated, then it sat dormant for a very long time. I was after I got my degree, I was a history professor at St. Francis University of Pennsylvania. But then I joined the Foreign Service of the Department of State and switched careers. So the idea of a book sat dormant for many, many years. And then four years ago, I said it was time. It was time to bring this book and bring Jacob Cox to the world. And so I set to it, and it took 4 years of very hard work.
Well, let's kind of go to the beginning of the Civil War. How did Jacob Dolson Cox, a former Divinity School student with no military training, become a commander in the Union Army? Explain the system that existed back then.
Well, it was the situation was that when the war started, the United States Army had 16,000 men. When the war ended, it had gotten over 3 million. So that was over 4 years. So they had to create a system. In order to do so, they couldn't just rely on professional soldiers. So they had to create from the privates up to the generals. And Cox was a senator, Ohio senator, and he had the feeling that there might be a civil war coming. So he studied Napoleon. He read military history. He could read Greek, Latin, and French. And so when the war started, he was appointed by Ohio's Governor Dennison as his military chief of staff. And also he was appointed as a brigadier general of volunteers, of which there were thousands appointed during the war. So he happened to be in the right time, in the right place at the right time. And also Governor Dennison invited George McClellan to be the first commander of Ohio's troops. So McClellan and Cox, in fact, started the war together. And that was a very propitious appointment because of McClellan's importance later in the war.
Now, there was a tension, as I learned in your book, Citizen General, a tension among commanders in the Army with these appointed generals and the regular military commanders. Explain that tension.
Yes. Well, when the war started, Winfield Scott, who was the general-in-chief, decided to, in effect, create two armies. He kept the regular army, and he said the war would be fought by them leading a volunteer army, which would disappear when the war was over. and this was an extremely inefficient system. And so that led to a lot of tension. Also, there was the attention to the fact that the West Point was one of the very few professional schools that existed at the time. And in 19th century America, the self-made man was the ideal. So that tension was very important. There's a book, a Thomas Goss, who had written a book, The War Within the Union High Command, as he put it, there was tension between the two strands of national military heritage, an embryonic professional spirit in the regular army, and a cultural faith and natural aptitude among the wartime volunteer officers. So the self-made man thought he could do anything. The man who came from West Point, the professional school, thought they should be the natural leaders, and each had suspicions of the others. The overwhelming majority of officers in the war were volunteers. It had to be. But the West Pointers always had the commands.
And this, you know, a lot of times these appointed or new citizen generals, also known as political generals, I guess, in Civil War histories, were there just to try to shine up their resume. I mean, they were not really there to fight the war. They were there for a different reason.
Well, that was the suspicion, that some of them were there just to polish their resumes, to have a war record to run on. But, of course, that wasn't possible because they all had to fight, and they were out there throughout the war in many subordinate positions. But the suspicion was always there. And interesting incident in the Atlantic campaign, William Tecumseh Sherman, who came to have a great deal of respect for Jacob Cox, had a chance to appoint John Logan of Illinois to head up one of his armies. But he decided not to because he said, well, he's a politician, and politicians are only there to shine their resumes. And, of course, Logan was a very skilled fighter, a very skilled general, and he was very unhappy about this. And Cox criticized Sherman very mildly, but he criticized him because he said, you prove to be a military leader on the battlefield, not in the classroom.
I'm speaking with historian Dr. Eugene Schmiel, the author of the book, A Citizen General, Jacob Dolson Cox and the Civil War Era. It's available where books are sold, and you can learn more about the book at wvxu.org. Jacob Cox was a Union Army general, a governor of Ohio, a congressman, a scientist, president of a railroad, a law school dean, president of the University of Cincinnati, and more. Do you recognize his name? What have you heard about Jacob Cox? You can ask a question or pass along a comment to Gene Schmiel by calling 513-419-7100. Emailing talk at wvxu.org or posting on Facebook or Twitter. Let's go back to the Civil War here, Gene, and talk about some of the highlights of Cox's command during the Civil War. I mean, beginning with what I think was his first assignment, and that was West Virginia.
Right. His first assignment was West Virginia, and McClellan gave him an autonomous command. He was to command 2,500 men to go down the Kanawha Valley and to take the cities of Charleston, which later became the capital of West Virginia, and Gauley Bridge. And the fact that he gave Cox this responsibility was quite unusual. Again, he had no experience whatsoever, but obviously he impressed McClellan, and he achieved his objective very quickly. And that was one of the reasons why West Virginia ultimately became a state. He later was called to Washington and took part in the Battle of Antietam, where he was the commander of the left wing of the Union forces. He was on the Atlanta campaign with Sherman, leading to the taking of Atlanta. And one of the interesting points was Cox's men broke the supply line to Atlanta, the Macon and Western Railroad, on August 31st, and the Confederate forces abandoned Atlanta the next day. So they didn't win the Battle of Atlanta, not on the battle. They won it on the supply train, and it was Cox's men who achieved that. Cox was also critical in the campaign in Franklin and Nashville, which was the total destruction of the Confederate forces in the West. And one of the more interesting elements of his military career was he was on his way from Nashville to North Carolina, and he stopped in Washington, and he sat in the gallery as the House debated and voted for the 13th Amendment. And if your listeners saw the movie Lincoln, that debate in the House was one of the critical points of that really quite well-done movie. And Jacob Cox was in the gallery applauding as loud as anyone else.
It's fascinating in your book, Citizen General, where you are quoting from his letters home to his wife, Helen. Just amazing descriptions and also a look into the man and his mind and the way things are working. It was fascinating because he very much took his role as a commanding general seriously.
Yes, very much so. When I did my original research, I saw many of his letters to her, and I really, it was very important to integrate them, plus the writings from his official reports, plus from the four history books that he wrote after the war, somewhat of a contrast to his different viewpoints over time. And then about 2 years ago, I was making one of my periodic visits to Oberlin College, where his papers are. And the archivist there, named Ken Grossi, told me that a few years ago, one of the family members had gotten together 200 additional letters and had made typescripts of them, and he gave them to me.
Wow.
I had seen 10 of these letters. I had not seen the other 190. And you talk about a mother lode, because it did exactly what you said. It gave such wonderful insights into the man, into his feelings, and to the fact that, which was unusual at the time, he treated his wife as an equal, as an intellectual equal.
A man, truly a man before his time, just just very insightful to read some of his thoughts. I'm speaking with Gene Schmiel, the author of Citizen General, Jacob Dolson Cox in the Civil War Era on Cincinnati Edition here on 91.7 WVXU. You can give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. I wanted to ask about that transition that Jacob Dolson Cox had from being a general to becoming governor of Ohio. He was still in the Army as a general when he became the governor of our state.
That's right. And that all goes ties together why I chose the title of the book. On the cover is Cox's official portrait as governor of Ohio, and he's wearing a major general's dress uniform. Because he saw himself like, are you ready for this? Cincinnatus. the Roman general who left his fields, did his job, went back, did not try to make more of the military as a career. And so Cox was the same way. So when he ran for governor, obviously the military record was very critical to his success. But in the portrait, he's holding in his hand his commission as governor. But on the table behind him, you can see his commission as a general, citizen general. He's someone who did his job for the nation and then went back to his normal life, back to politics. So the transition was quite easy for him, as it was for many people, like many, many people from Ohio became president. Ulysses Grant, Rutherford Hayes, James Garfield, Benjamin Harrison, and William McKinley. All of them with Ohio roots became president over the next 35 years.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one historian said, of that group, perhaps the most qualified was Jacob Cox. On the other hand, here we are today, and nobody remembers him for a variety of reasons, which I go to in the book, because he had, as he said to him, he says, he had great military aptitude. His political aptitude was lacking.
And he recognized that later in life, too. Quote about a candle there, I think, that he discussed.
That's right. He said the game was not worth the candle. He would not compromise. He was very, you know, he was a very stiff, stoic intellectual, and his colleagues told him, well, to be a good politician, you just talk in platitudes and don't say anything that's really controversial. And Cox said, I'm sorry, that's not me. I must put forth my ideas for the people to consider. And he became too independent. And in the very difficult times of Reconstruction, he got caught in the middle between the two extremes.
Kevin called and wanted to know if there was something in Cox's background, personal background, that led him to sign up for the Army.
You know, that's one of the great mysteries. I mean, millions of men signed up for the Army. Millions of men saw it as their duty in this national crisis. But him, he was bookish, he was shy, he was an intellectual. He was 6 foot tall, about 140 pounds. He wasn't exactly a great physical specimen. Very religious, but duty called, and he was a man of duty. And he constantly mentions it in his writings, in his private writings and his public writings. And if you had asked, is this someone who is going to make a successful military man, most people would have said no, because he didn't fit what you would think. So it's a bit of a mystery, but nobody knows what anybody's going to be except in a time of stress.
We had another listener who emailed, did you find any documents that showed what his men thought of Cox as a leader? And you do indicate in the book that he was well thought of, especially among his peers.
He was very much thought of as peers because he was what I call the quintessential subordinate. When his superiors gave him an order, they didn't have to worry. They were 100% certain it was going to be carried out. And sometimes he had a better idea, and they respected him so much that they took on the new idea. As for his subordinates, there is one historian who says Cox is someone, his men never loved him because he wasn't emotional. He wouldn't stir them up, but they always respected him, and they always knew that if he said something and if he gave an order, they knew it was for their own benefit and for the benefit of the military. So he and he says, again, introspectively, I was never emotional. So that when I would just frown a little bit, the men would really worry because they thought that I was being very, very negative with them. So he said he had to be very, very careful how he expressed emotions because he rarely did.
Dr. Eugene Schmiel, author of the book Citizen General, Jacob Dolson Cox and the Civil War Era, available where books are sold. And you can learn more about the book at WVXU.org. And it was very interesting to me as a Cincinnatian to see how much time Jacob Dolson Cox spent here in Cincinnati. A matter of fact, you told me before we went on the air that his house here in Cincinnati, up in Mount Auburn, just around the corner from the William Howard Taft National Historical Sites on the National Landmark list, right?
That's right. Well, he first lived in Cincinnati during the war in 1863. He was the commander of the Department of Ohio. He lived in Cincinnati, worked in Cincinnati under Ambrose Burnside. And so when he left the governorship, he wrote that he was going to move to Cincinnati, take up a legal career, because Cincinnati was, of course, the largest and most important city in Ohio. And so he returned there again in the 1880s and lived there for the rest of his life. And was recognized as a leader, as you said, president of the University of Cincinnati, dean of the Cincinnati Law School. So I think he enjoyed it very, very much, and he knew it was the place to be in Ohio. And as a native Clevelander, that's difficult for me to say.
Well, thank you very much, Gene. But here in Cincinnati, you mentioned the 1880s, and it's portrayed, at least I seem to recall at one point in the book, you talk about how Cincinnati was a pretty rough town in the 1880s, and that Cox had a role hiring extra police to kind of clean up the town.
Well, yes, it was a rough town, and there were some riots, and he was called on to head up a citizens committee, to help deal with the crisis, and they made recommendations to call in extra troops, extra police, to try to calm things down, because there was they were living down down near the downtown area, and that's why after those riots, after the difficult time when he was led up a citizens committee, that they moved up to the Gilman Avenue, it's called.
Yes, Gilman Avenue.
Gilman Avenue, because to get out of the crime area. But again, he had no official position other than being the president of the university, but he had such great respect that people call on him to do his civic duty. And duty was always preeminent for Jacob Cox.
Oh, general, governor, cabinet secretary, university president, law school dean, railroad president, historian, scientist. Why has Jacob Dolson Cox been so overlooked?
Well, it's a very good question. Why has he been overlooked? I have one of these quotes from a professor. Jacob Cox may be the most intriguing character from the Civil War era that most Americans have never heard of. And also, he mentioned in one of his writings to another officer that he was suffering the curse, the bad luck of being second in command. He was never the commander because he wasn't from West Point. He was always second. He was doing the work, and of course, the commander got all the credit or the blame. And that's one of the reasons why he wrote his books, so he could write the balance of history. But his books are considered excellent history. And they're still used today in modern histories. So, and of course, the other part was in 1865, he was on his way to becoming president. Late 1872, he was being forgotten already because of his personality. He did not have a political aptitude.
No political aptitude and was not a good self-promoter. You talk
not
a lot
a
in the book about that. That many of the generals, those political generals especially, good self-promoters.
You know, George McClellan, when he started the war, he had his own printing press with him. He could print up flyers on the fly. Early PR program.
Well, thank you very much for shining a light on this amazing individual, and hopefully more people will learn to recognize his name.
Well, Mark, thank you very much, and I hope people buy the book, and appreciate your taking the time with me.
Dr. Eugene Schmiel, the author of the book Citizen General, Jacob Dolson Cox and the Civil War Era. It's available in bookstores, and you can find more about it on our website, wvxu.org. Jacob Dolson Cox, by the way, is buried in Spring Grove Cemetery. A Boy and a Jaguar in about 15 minutes on Cincinnati Edition. And next, the story of American rowers going for the gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.